pointed it out.
Okay, again, I'm going to take the charge that we were given for this session literally, unlike most people that have given talks in the past 2 days. And I want to talk specifically about, no, I'm just kidding, the links back to the regulatory process. Now, I'm also going to make a disclaimer here. I'm not a regulator. I'm not a planner. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a program manager. I'm none of those things. I'm just a lowly scientist. Okay, so I really, honestly, have never been a permitter. I don't do permits, so I have a kind of a general sense.
You can quote one.
Yeah, I have a general sense of what happens, but I really have never had to sit in the trenches and do it. What I'm going to do is specifically try to address 5 or 6 different areas where I think the development tools that we've put together actually fit into that regulatory process. First is establish, I already mentioned this morning, one of the objectives of the SAMP is establish general regulatory or general programmatic permits for activities regulated under 4.4 in the context of that SAMP area. And somebody asked me, and I just received before I left a copy of the Aquatic Resources Conservation Program for San Diego Creek, and contained in this program or this document is indeed instructions and guidelines that will be used for streamlining that permitting in the SAMP area. Also, guidelines for how the resource areas are going to be managed and so on and so forth. So I'm not really going to talk about that. That's kind of in here, but that is definitely a link back to the regulatory program. Secondly, identify quantity of mitigation through simulation or actual assessment of post-project conditions. Now, because I really haven't told you how we do what we do, it's important to note that all the phases that we go through in the procedure that we do, be it baseline assessment, assessment of alternatives, development of watershed restoration plan, we use the same set of metrics, and we also can calculate units based on those metrics that can give us some kind of measure of loss of integrity. Okay, so we use those same metrics through the baseline assessment in an alternative analysis. When we do a simulation of post-project conditions, we can measure how much loss there is based on those same units, and we can also measure the same number of units that are increased when we do restoration, as I indicated this morning. So, one of the links back to the regulatory program is the district can take this tool, go out and either simulate if the project hasn't been completed yet, or after it has been completed, go out and do an actual assessment at that site using the same set of conditions, the same set of tools that were used in the baseline assessment, and make some kind of estimate of how much mitigation will be required to offset that impact. Okay? Is that clear, I hope? Secondly, as I mentioned this morning, and I talked about this, the location of where to put mitigation in the watershed based upon whatever scenario we have set up. The big bang for the buck, let's put a corridor in here, let's restore certain habitat, areas of critical habitat or whatever. We can use the same information to do that. So that's another link back to the regulatory process. The two things I didn't talk about this morning are identification of avoidance area, which is a critical one in the context of SAMP, and then how we do a comparison of alternatives. And again, we're going to be using the same information that we collected in the baseline assessment. So I'll talk about the last two. Here's the steps we go through. I already saw that. I'm going to try to sneak in here. What time do I have to? 10 till? Or 5 till? Okay. I'm going to try to sneak a little bit of method in here, okay? Phase one, identification of riparian ecosystems. It's been talked about all week, if I've been here a week already, it seems like it. We, in fact, that's the first step we go through. I don't actually do that because I don't do delineation, but a good friend of mine and colleague, Bob Lickwar, up at the Cold Regions Lab, does this for us. He's done it in all these watersheds. He has what he calls a high-precision watershed-scale delineation of wetlands. Okay, it's not equivalent to a jurisdictional, but it's pretty darn good. Okay, and basically what he does is he develops a GIS coverage for the... I'm sorry, somebody told me WUST is not an appropriate way to refer to the waters of the United States. Okay. Whatever. I say worse. He developed GIS coverage for large United States and riparian ecosystems using aerial photographs, topographic maps, goes to the field in a stratified random approach and verifies that GIS data layer, and then assigns a probability of jurisdictional status to each map polygon based on federal and our state criteria in the state of California because it's different. So just a little picture of that. Here's some of his geomorphic mapping. What he does is he goes in and maps the bankfold channel, the active floodplain, and the terraces. As I indicated this morning to you, our definition of riparian ecosystem includes everything out to these historical terraces, alluvial floodplains. Okay. So he maps that, and he overlays on top of that a map of the vegetation community types. Okay. And then based on that, and in addition to that soils information, he will develop a probability or ranking of the probability that any particular one of those polygons is actually a jurisdictional wetland. So you can see, we do have a laser over here. So the dark green areas like this in the channel are 100% probability that they're going to be jurisdictional wetland. As you move further away from the channel itself, the less and less likelihood that it's going to be a jurisdictional wetland. It's about the only way you can do it without actually going on site and doing a jurisdictional. These yellow areas here are really based on California's jurisdictional requirements and not federal requirements. Okay, so that's kind of phase one. You do it in a 100 square or 800 square mile watershed, and you know it's not an easy thing to do. It takes quite a while of time. Okay, so baseline assessment. What we do is we define riparian ecosystem assessment units. It's an important point that I haven't heard a single bit of discussion about for the past 2 days. How do you go about dividing up that watershed when you do your assessment? Okay, nobody said anything about it. Can't understand why. Second, if you define those assessment units, we actually go out and assess hydrologic, water quality, and habitat integrity of each riparian ecosystem unit using indicators across multiple spatial scales, as I've indicated before. Finally, we can calculate integrity indices and then integrity units for each of those assessment units. So the assessment unit concept is we define assessment units as riparian reaches. They're a segment of riparian ecosystem along a main stem channel that is relatively homogeneous with respect to geology, geomorphology, stream channel, geometry, substrate, hydrologic regime, veg communities, and cultural alteration. So basically what we're doing is we're going into the watershed. We've identified where the riparian ecosystems are based on Lickwater's coverages. And we go in and we just kind of, from an aerial perspective, we use an aerial photograph or topographic maps, and we'll try to do a division of each of those riparian ecosystems along main stems. It's kind of a rough cut using a remote stuff. So, for example, we might come in here. I keep thinking the laser is the button. So, conceptually at least, you may have a riparian reach that's in an urbanized stretch, and then you come into an agricultural stretch, and then you come into a more natural stretch, okay? That's a great simplification. This is a small part of a watershed, and what you can actually see here is a little bit hard to see, but if you look at this purple line right here, okay, and then this yellow section right here, this is the riparian reach. So that's riparian ecosystem. There's the downstream point, there's the upstream point. The area that I referred to this morning as the local drainage is that purple line I just outlined. That's the area, that's the portion of the watershed that drains directly to that riparian reach. And then the drainage basin for that reach would be this local drainage and all upstream local drainage. Okay, so you can translate that to the whole watershed. They got too many buttons. Just again for scale, kind of give you a sense of what we did in the different watersheds. San Diego Creek, 190 riparian reaches, 100 square miles. San Jacinto, 800 riparian reaches in 800 riparian. That's not right. Yeah, that's right. 800 reaches in 800 square miles. So there's a lot of them, and basically what we do is we. Let me see what the next slide says. Indicators. We use indicators to assess attributes and characteristics that influence riparian ecosystem integrity. we all seem to be just skipping over what those are this week, so we won't talk about that too much. But the essential thing, or the important thing, and this is what one of my observations this morning is, the indicators capture information across three spatial scales and bring that into the assessment of any individual riparian reach. Okay, I think that's unique. So we have indicators that we collect at the riparian reach proper. We have indicators that capture information about the local drainage, and we have indicators that capture information about the drainage basin. Okay. And tie it all back to the riparian reach. Again, I'm not going to talk about indicators much, but the indicators, the hydrologic indicators, are selected to reflect frequency, magnitude, and temporal distribution of stream charge and the interaction between the stream channel and the floodplain. Water quality indicators incorporate all those hydrologic indicators plus land use in the drainage basin with respect to potential increase in non-point pollutants at multiple spatial scales. And again, the stream delivery system and hydrologic interaction. And habitat indicators are selected to reflect spatial extent and quality of riparian habitat, continuity, connectedness of riparian habitat at multiple spatial scales, and then the spatial extent and quality of adjacent non-riparian habitat. Random slide I just picked to show. Basically, what this shows is, regardless of what you're looking at in terms of an indicator or an index, we get a really good, or we get a pretty good range of distribution across the possible scores or the possible indicator values. So what this shows is on the left, on one of these... Does anybody have just a... Okay. On this axis, we have all the riparian reaches. And on this axis, we have the in this case, this is an indicator score. So what this shows is we have riparian reaches that score very high in terms of the index, and we have riparian reaches that score very low, and we've got a good basically cross-sectional area. Our indicators and our indices are ending up giving us very low scores in terms of the integrity index and very high scores across the entire range of possibility, okay? Which is good. That's a good thing. And so this is what I showed you this morning. This is what we end up. This is the map, one of the maps we give the regulators or the districts in as the final result of the baseline assessment. So what this shows you is hydrologic integrity index across all the different local drainages. They're in the black lines here, okay, from an index of 6 to 11, from an index, that's the reddish, to an index of 20 to 25. That's, I think there's 25 possible in this, okay, so... That gives a visual of what's happening in that watershed. Okay, so there's habitat and water quality. So what we do in alternatives analysis, we have a couple objectives. Number one, we need to help the district develop they keep changing the name on this. They now call it a prospective aquatic resource conservation area. Okay, it's an avoidance area. They want to determine based upon the baseline assessment and other information what areas within the watershed should be avoided, okay, as a result of the SAMP process. And the criteria, different set of criteria, okay, not the criteria we've been talking about for 2 days, are that we use to build that avoidance area. This is basically a submarine sandwich, GIS submarine sandwich, okay. We use medium to high integrity indices. We use the index itself, okay. We identify headwater reaches are included in that avoidance area, or were included in that avoidance area. Corridors connecting existing large patches, supporting threat areas that support threatened and endangered species, critical habitat under existing other management plans, NCCP reserve system, and then removed from that avoidance area were areas with greater than 15% impervious surfaces, okay, urban areas, and then disconnected reaches in agricultural areas. Okay, so that's the basis for building that submarine sandwich. The second objective we had was to actually go in and assess direct and indirect impacts for all the alternatives, and not just the preferred alternative developed by the Corps, but for all the other alternatives, the general land use plan, the Irvine Company's 30-year build-out plan, and two or three other alternatives. Go in, simulate direct and indirect impacts, recalculate integrity indices based upon our original indicators, and then compare baseline and to simulated results. Okay? Everybody with me? So, looking at that first objective, here what you see on the left is what turned out to be for San Diego Creek in red, the avoidance area that was delineated based upon that submarine sandwich of GIS layers, okay? And then on the right, in kind of across, or not just a line, the green and white, or the white with green on it, that's the Irvine Company 30-year build-out plan, okay? This is kind of a unique situation because Irvine Company is, the people that have inherited the money or the basic Spanish land grant that was occurred in this area. And so it's a very unique watershed in the sense that they own most of the developable land. Okay, and so you're really only dealing with one corporate entity when you have to deal with it. So the really good thing about this is another map that regulators love, is because what it does is it immediately identifies the areas of controversy. Okay, you just overlay this map, and you could ignore most of this area. Okay, because it's not controversial, and you can focus really heavily on where things overlay each other. And it's an incredible time saver, and just is wonderful. They love it. I liked it. Okay, now I'm going to switch gears on you, because I don't have the slides for San Diego Creek, but I do have. This is kind of interesting because I do have the slide for a project that we did serendipitously. We did an alternatives analysis. This is a highway project that just happened to occur in one of the watersheds that we had already done the baseline assessment for. This is called Sock Tip. It's actually got 29 different alternatives. I've only shown you the basic ones, like 8 alternatives. And basically what it's doing is connecting San Clemente to the Irvine Spectrum area. So what they asked me to do is they said, we want you to analyze all these 29 alternatives. And so we basically used the same kind of criteria. Oh, no, wait, we didn't. I don't know what button to push here. Okay, here's the criteria used for comparing those alternatives. Waters of the United States directly and indirectly impacted in terms of area or length. Okay, riparian ecosystems directly or indirectly impacted. Critical habitats directly impacted. And then the metrics coming out of our actual baseline assessment, quantity of hydrologic water quality and habitat integrity directly and indirectly impacted. And then the change in those integrity indices. So what I'll show you is just an example. Again, this is not a map, but it's a graph of how really a visual graph that really shows you very and allows you to identify very quickly what's going on in this system. So what this shows is just some of the alternatives on the left. Okay, and in this particular case, it's miles of stream channels directly impacted. And I can tell you that's one of the criteria. Another one is here's a road toad critical habitat, okay, that we analyzed for those alternatives. And then in this case, it's loss of water quality integrity units and directly impacted riparian ecosystems. The good story about this, or the take-home message about this, is the SOC TIP, the Transportation Corps Authority that was involved with this, were basically strongly requested by the district to have us do this alternative analysis. Believe me, they were heavily resistant at the beginning of the process. But over the period of about 6 months or a year after we started to do the analysis and we started to coordinate with some of their engineers and biologists at the Transportation Corridor Authority, everything turned around. They started to look at what we were doing and try to understand it, and they actually began to become proactive and actually use the baseline assessment and the simulation of post-project impacts based upon each alternative to their advantage, and actually began to redo some of their corridor alternatives based upon the kinds of information they were seeing. Because you can use it very effectively to identify, again, hotspots where you have areas of potential conflict or potential impact. Okay, that's it.